Chapter 17. 8 introductions and 3 tiresome conversations after his introduction to Dr. Mooney, Hagen was seated in a small office, feverishly pounding an adding machine. Scientists dote on computers and engineers fondle digital calculators, but accountants are a Victorian lot. They still prefer traditional adding machines with thumb-size buttons and paper tapes that spit out printed totals. The controller was a CPA, a graduate of the University of Texas School of Business, and an ex-Navy man. And he had the engraved degrees and photographs of the ships he'd served on displayed on the oak-paneled wall of his office to prove it. Hagen had detected an uneasiness in the man's eyes, but no more than he'd expect from any corporate finance director who had a government auditor snooping around his private territory. There had been no suspicious look, no hesitation, when he asked to spot-check the telephone records for the last 3 years. Though his accounting experience with the Justice Department was limited to photographing ledgers in the dead of night, he knew enough of the jargon to talk a good line. Anyone who happened to glance in his office and saw him scribbling notes and intently examining the tape on the adding machine would have thought he was an old pro. The numbers on the tape were exactly that, numbers. But the note scribbling consisted of a methodical diagram of the placement and view angles of the security TV cameras between his office and Mooney's. He also wrote out 2 names and added several notations beside each one. The first was Raymond LeBaron, and the second was Leonard Hudson. But now he had a third, Gunnar Erickson. He was certain that Erickson had faked his death along with Hudson and dropped from the living to work on the Jersey Colony project. He also knew Hudson and Erickson would never completely cut their ties with Patent and Laboratory. The facility and its high-powered crop of young scientists were too great an asset to ignore. There had to be an underground channel to the inner core. The telephone records for a facility with 3,000 employees filled several cardboard cartons. Control had been tight. Everyone who used a phone for any purpose, business or personal, had to keep a diary of the calls. Hagen wasn't about to attempt an examination of each one. That chore would take weeks. He was concerned only with the entries in Mooney's monthly diaries, especially those involving long distance. Hagen was not psychic, nor was he as exact as some men he knew who had a talent for detecting an irregularity. But he had an eye and a gut instinct for the hidden that seldom failed him. He copied down 6 numbers that Mooney had phoned more than once in the past 90 days. 2 were itemized as personal calls, 4 as company calls, long shots all. Still, it was the only way he might trace a lead to another member of the inner core. Playing by the rules, he picked up the phone and punched the patent and lab operator, requesting an open line and promising to record all of his calls. The hour was late, and most of the list showed area codes of numbers in the Middle West or on the East Coast. Their time zones were 2 or 3 hours ahead, and they had likely shut down for the day. But he doggedly began calling anyway. "Centennial Supply," announced a male in a bored tone. "Yes, hello. Is anyone in this evening?" "The office is closed. This is the 24-hour order desk." "My name is Judge, and I'm with the federal government," said Hagen, using his cover in case the phone was tapped. "We're doing an audit of the Patent and Physics Laboratory in Bend, Oregon." "You'll have to call back tomorrow morning after the office opens." "Yes, I'll do that. But can you tell me exactly what kind of business Centennial Supply conducts?" "We supply specialized parts and electronics for recording systems." "For what applications?" "Mostly business. Video for recording executive meetings, laboratory experiments, security systems, and executive audio for secretaries, stuff like that, you know." "How many employees do you have?"
"Around 12.
"Thank you very much," said Hagen. "You've been most helpful. Oh, one more thing. Do you get many orders from Pattenden?"
"Not really. Every couple of months they'll order a part to update or modify their video systems."
"Thanks again. Goodbye." Hagen scratched that one and tried again. His next 2 calls reached answering machines.
One was a chemical lab at Brandeis University in Waltham, and the other an unidentified office at the National Science Foundation in Washington. He checked the latter for a follow-up in the morning and tried an individual's number.
Hello?
Hagen looked at the name in Mooney's diary. Dr. Donald Fremont?
Yes.
Hagen went through his routine.
What do you wish to know, Mr. Judge?
Fremont's voice sounded elderly. I'm making a spot check of long-distance telephone calls. Has anyone from Pattenden called you in the last 90 days? Hagen asked, looking at the dates of the calls and playing dumb.
Why, yes, Dr. Earl Mooney. He was a student of mine at Stanford. I retired 5 years ago, but we still keep in touch. Did you by any chance also have a student by the name of Leonard Hudson?
Leonard Hudson, he repeated as if trying to recall.
I met him on 2 occasions. He wasn't in my class, though. Before my time, or I should say before my tenure at Stanford, I was teaching at USC when he was a student.
Thank you, Doctor. I won't trouble you further.
Not at all. Glad to help.
Scratch 4. The next name from the diary was an Anson Jones. He tried again, well aware it never came easy, and that making a gold strike was 99% luck.
Hello?
Mr. Jones, my name is Judge.
Who?
Thomas Judge. I'm with the federal government, and we're running an audit on Pattenden Physics Laboratory.
I don't know any Pattenden. You must have the wrong number.
Does the name Dr. Earl Mooney ring a bell?
Never heard of him.
He's called your number 3 times in the last 60 days.
Must be a phone company foul-up.
You are Anson Jones, area code 303, number 547. Wrong name, wrong number. Before you hang up, I have a message.
What message?
Hagen paused and then leapt.
Tell Leo that Gunner wants him to pay for the airplane. You got that?
There was silence on the other end for several moments. Then finally, is this a crank call? Goodbye, Mr. Jones. Pay dirt. He called the 6th listing just to be on the safe side. An answering service for a stock brokerage firm answered. A dry hole. Elation. That was what he felt. He became even more elated as he added to his notes. Mooney was not one of the inner core, but he was connected. One of the subordinate officers under the high command. Hagen tapped out a number in Chicago and waited. After 4 rings, a woman answered sweetly.
Drake Hotel?
My name is Thomas Judge, and I'd like to confirm a room reservation for tomorrow night.
One moment, and I'll connect you with reservations.
Hagen repeated the request for confirmation with the desk clerk. When asked for a credit card number to hold the room for late arrival, he gave Anson Jones's phone number in reverse.
Your room is confirmed, sir.
Thank you.
What time was it?
A glance at his watch told him it was 8 minutes to midnight. He closed the briefcase and wiggled into his coat. Taking a cigarette lighter from one pocket, he slid the interior workings from its case. Next, he removed a thin metal shaft with a dental mirror on one end from a slit in his rear coat flap. Hagen moved to the doorway. Clutching the briefcase between his knees, he stopped short of the threshold and tilted the tiny mirror up and down the corridor. It was empty. He turned the mirror until it reflected the television monitor above the far end of the corridor. Then he positioned the lighter until it barely protruded around the doorframe and pressed the flint lever. Inside the security booth behind the main lobby, a screen on one of the TV monitors suddenly turned to snow. The guard at the console quickly began checking the circuit lights.
I've got a problem with number 12, he announced.
His supervisor came over from a desk and stared at the monitor.
Interference. The eggheads in the electrophysics lab must be at it again.
Suddenly, the interference stopped, only to begin again on another monitor.
That's funny, said the supervisor. I've never seen it happen in sequence before.
After a few seconds, the screen cleared, showing nothing but an empty corridor. The 2 security guards simply looked at each other and shrugged. Hagen turned off the miniature electrical impulse jammer as soon as he stepped inside and closed the door to Mooney's office. He walked softly over to the window and closed the drapes. He slipped on a pair of thin plastic gloves and turned on the overhead lights. Hagen was a master at the technique of tossing a room. He didn't bother with the obvious, the drawers, files, address, and telephone lists. He went directly to a bookshelf and found what he had hoped to find in less than 7 minutes. Mooney might have been one of the leading physicists in the nation, but Hagen had read him like a pictorial magazine. The small notebook was hidden inside a book entitled Celestial Mechanics in True Perspective by Horace DeLiso. The contents were in a code employing equations. It was Greek to Hagen, but he wasn't fooled by the significance. Normally, he would have photographed the pages and put them back, but this time he simply pocketed them, fully realizing he could never have them deciphered in time. The guards were still struggling with the monitors when he stepped up to the counter. "Would you like me to sign out?" he said with a smile. The head security guard came over, a quizzical expression on his face. "Did you just come from finance?" "Yes." "We didn't see you on the security TV." "I can't help that," said Hagen innocently. "I walked out the door and through the hallways until I came here. I don't know what else to tell you." "Did you see anyone? Anything unusual?" "No one. But the lights flickered and dimmed a couple of times." The guard nodded. "Electrical interference from the electrophysics lab. That's what I thought it was." Hagen signed out and walked into a cloudless night, humming softly to himself.